Today's episode of the Hash Rate Podcast is brought to you by Luxor Technology, North America's largest mining pool. Luxor's goal is to operate enterprise-class mining pools with professionalism and an intense customer focus. They provide a top-notch user experience and have a great selection of pools for you to mine to, from a variety of notable altcoins to Big Daddy Bitcoin, for which they launched their mining pool in October, so be sure to go and check them out. We are incredibly grateful that Luxor has chosen to sponsor this show going into 2020. We would love it if you, as listeners, would support the show by supporting them. You can find them online at luxor.tech and give them a follow on Twitter at Luxor Tech Team. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast, the best crypto mining podcast in the history of the world. It is Friday the 13th and it is a freaky Friday. It has been a crazy couple of weeks for the economy globally. Wow, coronavirus has really wrecked shop when it comes to global markets. Also, not to mention the incredible loss of life, which is terrible. Hopefully you and yours are staying safe during this crazy time. Yesterday, March 12th, Bitcoin dropped below $4,000, had people calling for the end of cryptocurrency as we know it, but we're still here. We're still holding strong. We know where this thing is headed and we are along for the ride. That being said, folks, everything that we say on Hash Rate Podcast is meant for education and entertainment. It should not be taken as financial advice. Do your own research, manage your own finances. Hopefully you're not taking any advice from random people on the interwebs. Today's guest is John Lee Quigley from Miner Update. He joins us to talk about the ASIC hardware race, some new ASICs that are coming out, how those can impact hash rate. We also talk about coronavirus's impact on the mining markets, because obviously it's the 800-pound gorilla that's in every room right now and on everybody's mind and a part of every conversation. Also, we talk about Charles Edwards' energy model and stock to flow and how those two pricing models are showing positives and negatives when it comes to the actual price of Bitcoin. And then we talk about some of Miner Update's updates, which I encourage you all to stick around for and take a listen into. One of the things that John talks about in the show is the conference that Miner Update was planning on doing in Chicago at the end of April. That conference has been postponed until Q3, as large gatherings have been postponed due to coronavirus. So stay frosty and we will make sure when that updated information is available, we will provide it for you here. Also, check the show's notes for some information on how you can sign up for Miner Update's newsletter. We find tremendous value in that newsletter and we are sure you will too. So check that out. As always, I'm going to ask that you take a moment, leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. Help us get this podcast out to more people. We are so grateful for your help. And as always, today's episode of the Hash Rate Podcast is presented to you by Hashrate OS. Hashrate OS is a Linux-based operating system designed to help you increase the efficiency of your mining machines and maximize your overall profitability. Now with ASIC and GPU support, Hashrate OS provides the best experience in crypto mining, allowing you to manage your facility fully from any mobile device and take complete control of your mining operations. Hashrate OS is mining as it should be. Be sure to head over and check out the Hashrate operating system at os.hashrate.com. Again, that's os.hashrate.com. All right, without further ado, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski here today with Crypto Chris Walken. And back on the show, it's been a minute, but we've got John Lee Quigley back from Miner Update. John, how you doing, man?
Hey, it's good to be back, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. You guys have been cranking out some quality work, and I know we're going to talk a bit about the updates that Miner Update has coming and some of the things that you've got on the horizon. We've got quite the conversation to have tonight. There's a few different topics that we want to cover, and I understand you are in Bali right now. Is that right?
I am. It's a tough life. I'm surviving out here, you know, doing some mining research and enjoying the beach in the meantime.
So for all of us that are dealing with the actual winter right now, what's the weather like over there?
Well, it's actually rainy season here. So it's one of the only places where it can rain very, very heavily, but still be extremely hot at the same time. But it's okay. We can manage that.
You get by. I get it. All right. Well, let's jump into some of these topics. I think first we should definitely talk about the new miner releases that have been announced by WhatsMiner, MicroBT, and Bitmain. So the M30S and the S19 have both been announced by the respective manufacturers. What's your take on what's going on here and the recent updates to the hardware race?
Yeah, it's a huge innovation. The S19 Pro 110 terahash per second. So that's going to be a big jump. We're actually researching a piece at the moment for our next newsletter. And I just feel like every new hardware release just puts more into effect the Matthew effect, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And in mining terms, that will be there's more advantage to the big miners, and those that are middle and small scale get more and more put under pressure. Because if you think about it, it's the big miners that have more cash on their balance sheet to spare, and they're going to be in the position to acquire these miners. And they're first in line to get these miners. They launch them, deploy them at lower difficulty levels. And then by the time mid-scale and smaller scale miners can get their hands on such hardware, the difficulty levels are already higher and they're going to be mining at less returns.
You know, less the M30Ss, because there's been a little bit more space between the M20S release. But I mean, really, it seems like the S19 is coming out right on the heels of the S17.
Yeah. Well, coming up near the end of last year, in the conference we did in Chengdu, there was just a lot of talk about getting new, more powerful hardware. And I feel like miners were just, they were so eager for new chips, more powerful chips. So the demand is there. And I suppose the chip designers are just trying to get their hands on as much chips as possible and try to design more powerful and more efficient hardware.
Yeah, I don't think the S19 is much of a surprise, at least with it going over 100 terahash, because we talked about it a few months ago when we saw that the S17s were nearing 70, that we kind of called that we would see 100 terahash on one ASIC this year. And to touch on what John was saying, I mean, I think Bitcoin has been a big boys game for a while now, and it's just getting more and more to where unless you're mining at scale, it's just not worth mining Bitcoin at this point, especially like John said. I mean, the big deep pockets are the ones that are going to get these S19s first, and they're going to get them online, and everybody else is going to be holding onto their brand new S17 pluses that they just got. And now we got the S19s coming. So we'll see what happens.
I just wonder, moving forward as well, what it's going to look like, because at the moment, a pretty big, decent sized miner on paper, it would probably, in terms of like a mining operation, it would probably look okay. But I wonder, moving forward, as this just keeps happening, new hardware comes out, and the deep pockets of the big miners keep applying hardware, it would just seem like anyone who's not operating on the lowest part of the cost curve is just in an extremely vulnerable position.
Yeah, absolutely. And the halving is another thing to take into account here, because, I mean, there's got to be a correction on the hash rate at some point in time. You know, I do think that we're going to see that correction in the hash rate and a pretty serious price correction on Bitcoin post-halving. And that could lead to a capitulation of some of these people who are on the top tier of that power curve right now. They're paying, you know, 5 cents or more. They may have to capitulate and sell those S17s. With the S19s coming out, I think they're going to start shipping April, May. That's going to put those S17s at a price that's really attractive. So I'd be curious, because I mean, with firmware, you can push the S17s, especially if they're in immersion, you can push them over 100 terahash. So I wonder if the S19 sales will suffer somewhat for the larger facilities that are using immersion, if they instead choose to go with the lower priced S17s as opposed to the new S19s, if they're still able to get relatively close on the terahash per second, although the efficiency isn't as good, depending on the cost savings. I don't know, this may be a move too soon for Bitmain. They may be coming out a little too fast with this new machine and could potentially, depending on, of course, everything that does occur post-halving, be shooting themselves in the foot a little bit, you know?
Yeah, that's quite an interesting angle, that maybe there's a competitive advantage for some miners to try and pick up lower priced S17s. But I do feel like the demand is there for S19s, but it's also likely dependent on price. If price tanks, then maybe people won't want the S19s as much as they do at this moment.
Now, John Lee, from your experience, Chinese miners, are they using immersion? Because I know it's becoming a hot commodity in the States, but is that prevalent in Asia?
I am actually not in a position to say that, because I'm sure some Chinese miners are probably experimenting with it. I know NovaBlock have some hardware development project for immersion that they're doing. But in terms of my experience going around China and speaking to Chinese miners, I didn't speak to any that was actively using it. Yeah, it seems to be something they're experimenting big with in Texas at the moment.
Yeah, definitely Immersion Systems is leading the charge on that Texas immersion movement. And I think NovaBlock works pretty closely with them. So that would make sense. I haven't heard about their hardware project. Is that anything more that you can speak on?
That's the immersion project.
Oh, gotcha.
Immersion Systems, yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, immersion cooling does a lot to elongate the life of the machine. And there's, you know, other benefits as well as far as how you can crank those things up, right? You're talking about almost a 40% increase in the terahash per second that you can push each machine to. So that's, I mean, that's pretty significant. And I know a lot of people look at immersion and they consider the cost, right? Because it is more expensive to build an immersion farm than it is a traditional farm. However, when you consider that, you know, you're going to be able to push your machines that much harder and run them for a longer period of time, there's, I mean, a considerable benefit to doing that, but it takes a certain kind of investor with, you know, the capital up front to be able to handle that. And we're, I mean, we're seeing a lot more capital be deployed in the States as of late. And I'm sure, you know, you guys are hearing about the same thing on your side. With Miner Update, I know you guys have done a ton of research in the Asian markets, and you obviously had your summit in Chengdu last year. As we're moving into 2020, are you finding and exploring new little hotspots around the world that have mining developments?
We're hearing a lot from Texas, to be honest. And it kind of comes back into the immersion system again, and miners setting up with a really long-term view for their business plan. Because if a mining operation sets up and like all the factors are looking good for the long-term, low electric rates, and they have the capital to get the latest gen equipment, but you're in a place like Texas where it's just extremely, extremely hot weather, then the extra capital expenditure into something like immersion cooling makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Another, I can't say it's a new trend because, you know, Upstream Data has been doing this for a while, but it seems like there is a real rush right now to deploy smaller containers on a lot of the wellheads for natural gas reserves around the U.S.
Seems like a few firms are looking into that. Also, there was a story during the week of the New York...
The New York power plant that had converted.
Yeah, and seemingly they had to shut down before many times during the year, but the 50K worth of Bitcoin they're going to be bringing in now...
A day.
Means they can, yeah. So I suppose it makes a lot of sense, and it's going to be an interesting use case for miners. It's not just going to be capital hungry risk takers who are going to be in the mining industry. It's going to be energy companies that need to use some electricity which would have went elsewhere. I know also Chris Ben Dixon talked about it on the What's Happening podcast, that S9s could be potentially used for grid offsetting, so that when a new renewable infrastructure has been set up in a prospective region, oftentimes the industrial demand isn't there, and sometimes the cost goes on those in the region until the industrial demand comes. And he talked about the potential use case for S9s to take some of this extra energy instead of putting the cost on those in the region.
Yeah, and there's a lot of facilities that just have a lot of waste. I mean, they're generating the power anyway, right? It's got to go somewhere. And I think it's probably just going to come down to better education, you know, the outreach, being able to speak to these power producers that, I mean, let's face it, most of them, maybe they've heard of Bitcoin at this point, but it's probably not been too long of a learning curve for them to really wrap their heads around it. But I think what started off is just covering some of the natural gas flare that's destroying the environment has really transitioned into a new segment of Bitcoin mining that could prove to be pretty profitable for the people who are ready to move on it quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at the end of the day, people are profit driven, right? If they see a way to cut costs or they see a way to squeeze out extra revenue out of the resources they have, they're going to do it. So Bitcoin mining is a amazing application of that.
Yeah, and I think it could breathe some new life into S9s, because I know the closer we get to the halving, the more and more these things are going to dump. And then with S19s coming out, people are going to sell their S17s, and the S9 guys are going to want S17s. So I could definitely see some life being breathed back into the S9s.
You're going to be able to get S9s for like $3.50. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to cost more to ship them. Somebody had approached Hashrate this week and they had asked us, they said they have about 1,000 megawatts that just goes unused over the course of the year, which I thought is a good sign. They read that article about the facility in New York, and it's crazy what that can do. Those articles in Forbes, they reach people. So could be a great thing.
Yeah, they make a difference.
So dude, all right, you are in Asia now and the world is on fire with news of the coronavirus that's come to kill us all. What's the I mean, dude, it's crazy. Like, I don't know how it is in Bali, but over here, you've got videos of people fighting over toilet paper. I go to the local grocery store and like, there's no water. All of the sanitation products are gone. It's blowing my mind. And I'm in a place where there's not even any cases yet. So I can't imagine that it's going to get better anytime soon. I think it's going to get a lot worse before that. But what are you seeing right now with coronavirus or COVID-19 and how it's impacting the mining industry?
First of all, in Bali, people must just be too chill because there's like the masks are full up and stock in store. People are just going around being like, coronavirus. I'm not really sure what's going to happen with that. But with the mining, we actually seen something quite interesting happen where typically when prices rise, demand for rigs will increase because the profit margins of miners increase. But price increased, and because all the Chinese manufacturers were shut because of coronavirus concerns, then this demand for new rigs couldn't be met. And there was huge demand for new rigs, but hash rate and difficulty stayed the same, even though profit margins widened. So Bitcoin miners across the cost curve just enjoyed increased margins with no corresponding change in difficulty. And we're only really seeing now, as the manufacturers start to return to work and the repair facilities set up again, that difficulty is going to rise again.
So people are getting back to work in China now?
Yeah, there's been a few announcements. Bitmain have opened their repair facility as of around a week ago. I believe manufacturers are slowly coming back to work and getting their shipping organized, and people can get their hands on mining rigs again.
Nice. Well, yeah, I mean, rainy season's around the corner, so it would be a bad time to elongate work stoppage.
Yeah, that's true. We're seeing the impact of coronavirus in other ways as well. Bitcoin 2020 was canceled yesterday, so
postponed to Q3. Yeah.
And conferences in China obviously as well were shutting down. And some people were actually saying that Token Insight are going to do an online conference where people just log in on their laptop, and some people believe we might see a bit more of a trend of that. I was actually chatting to someone during the week, and he said he doesn't feel like people even need to go to conferences. They can just do it all online, but there's still a pretty nice element to going and meeting people face to face and putting a face to the name.
I mean, let's face it, for some people, if it wasn't for crypto conferences, they'd never leave their computer, right?
So yeah, that's true.
But I think it's the smart thing for Bitcoin 2020 to postpone. Outside of crypto, you've got tons of gatherings being canceled. They just announced the cancellation of South by Southwest in Austin. And for music lovers, Miami Music Week has basically been shot down this year. Ultra Music Festival was canceled. Tomorrowland was canceled. So I think the world is really responding to this scare. And I mean, when you consider that, you know, only 100,000 people have been infected, and you say only 100,000, it's 100,000 is a lot, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a very small percentage. But it does indicate that, you know, governments and municipalities are pretty concerned about this.
I think it's the virality, really, they're very concerned about, because for every one person, that person can infect 2 to 3 people. And this virus was only really noticed on the 31st of December. So to have 100,000 people infected now is like, wow.
Yeah. And I think Italy 10x their cases in a week. That's nuts. I mean, just imagine if this time next week we're at 1 million people worldwide that have been infected. You know, it's a scary thing to think about. I've got a flight on Wednesday to Europe, so I'm going to be bathing in Purell before, masked up, wearing gloves and goggles. It's going to be a sight to see.
Yeah, going through the airport as well, I'm sure a lot of people take extra caution, like getting masks, and so many people go through the airport that could be potentially infected.
Yep, for sure. Speaking of infected, it looks like Whale Bearman has finally joined us. He's a little bit late getting on, had a late arrival from his dinner. Are you on here, man?
Or maybe he's not.
Maybe he's not.
Yeah. No, I'm here.
Sorry. Oh, you're there? Oh, yeah. Welcome. How are you?
Great. Yeah, we had a smorgasbord of food. So
can you say that word one more time?
No, I can't. I ate so much food. Like I can't even explain how much food I have.
Well, you came in at the opportune time. We're talking about your favorite topic ever.
Okay.
Coronavirus.
Okay. Can I start off with, I'm not an expert, but I have a lot of open source information.
But you did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
No.
It was I guess I'm the only one old enough to remember that commercial.
It was a Motel 8.
Okay. You probably got the coronavirus at the Motel 8, to be honest.
No, yeah. So what are you guys talking about, the COVID?
Oh, getting technical on us. No, we were talking about how it's how it's scaring people and how a lot of the conferences have been canceled or postponed in and out of crypto.
Yeah, so unlike most viruses that happen, if you remember like H1N1, SARS, MARS, they're all coronaviruses. This one, much like all three that I mentioned, can be spread through the air like aerosol. And on top of that, it does last on non-host for 9 days. It's been recorded to last 15 days. So that brings like a lot of issues to public events. And, you know, right now, people, especially in the US, the big thing is testing, right? So we have numbers from everyone that they really are just kind of testing people that have known connections to someone who was in an area around someone who's infected. Maybe they traveled abroad, but they're not testing people that have symptoms of the virus, right? And in this case, they will actually test for the flu or, you know, something else, but they won't get approval from the CDC to actually test you for the coronavirus or COVID-19.
Well, my understanding is they don't have the kits, right? There's just not enough kits.
They do.
They do have the kits. They're just not testing.
It's yes, but they have to get approval from the CDC until Monday. So Monday will roll around and there's going to be enough test kits for everyone to test for these things. So I'm not worried about it, but...
Well, hold on. You're not worried about it, says the guy who's got 150 pounds of rice and enough dry beans to bury a person in.
That's why I'm not worried about it. I've been prepared for all of this stuff. I mean, I've had like 3,000 rounds of ammunition in my basement.
That is the most American thing. What do you need to prepare for the potential global pandemic? Give me a drum of bullets, please.
I've done this before this ever happened. You know, I'm not someone that wants to be in panic mode. I'm always someone that wants to be in prepared mode. It's funny. You see pictures and videos of people in stores like fighting over toilet paper and stuff like that. You don't really need to be worried about that stuff. Do you think all these people need 24 rolls for 1 month?
I mean, hope not. I mean, they must have some serious plans. Before we go too deep down this rabbit hole, we do have someone who may be able to provide some information. I don't know. Walken, is your mic working again?
I'm on my phone right now. I don't know how this sounds.
Sounds good.
All right, sounds really good.
So
I miss your voice.
I know. Hey, buddy. Hey.
I miss you.
So, I'm dealing with freaking broski problems right now.
I miss your laugh.
In a remote location with shit internet.
All right. So, Walken, today it was announced that the first U.S. sailor contracted coronavirus in Italy. So you're a Navy man. Navy saying anything about the virus and how to prepare?
So I saw the message, but we're not hitting DEFCON levels yet, but I would expect to hear something on Monday, most likely. They're going to end up going high and right and start freaking out. Just like TikTok, right? TikTok was going out and then the Army was like, thou shall not use TikTok if you're active duty military. So yeah, there's probably something coming, but I'll be honest, they're not going to give a shit and we're still going to go everywhere because we're the military.
Okay, hold on. Let's not veer too far off path here. We don't get John Leon often. I know we have a little catch up here, but all right. So back
That's
to-
That's all right. I was just headed off to get some rice and beans.
So, I mean, what do you think this is going to do for consensus? Like, do you think consensus is going to happen? I mean, is it too early to postpone that?
That's a big question. I really don't know. But I know the co-founders of Minor Update are planning a conference in Chicago about the week before consensus. So a lot is really hinging on the coronavirus now and how well it can be contained over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I've heard about that conference. Kind of excited for it.
Yeah, if it goes ahead, it should be amazing.
Yep, yeah, it will be.
Well,
stop raising your hand, Will Bear Man.
Dude, I'm trying to be polite. I'm trying to figure out how to properly not, you know, cut people off.
All right, you've got the floor.
All right, so one of the things of viruses and pandemics is that they always have waves. They have mainly three waves. The first wave, which is when everyone figures out about the virus and spikes up erratically, and then it goes back down once containment happens. And then you have like a middle ground where it sometimes meets maybe halfway of what the first wave did. And then you have the third wave that almost reaches the first wave. So like looking at this
is like like pandemic TA right now.
Dude, I'm sorry. Like I get obsessed with this shit.
Right, Corona Moon.
Like I really get obsessed with it and I want to learn about it because, you know, ultimately I'm worried more of the economy and trading aspects. This affects supply chains and the world economy. So that's more of what I'm worried about and why I'm like learning more about it because it has a monetary value to me. What I'm saying is, basically, anything from now until I would say first quarter of next year has a high probability of getting canceled.
What do you gents here think about the markets tanking and how Bitcoin might respond to that? Because we're seeing the S&P 500, the Dow, in huge losses, the Fed cutting interest rates.
Yep,
bonds.
There's going to be a lot of information on what kind of asset Bitcoin
is going
to be.
So it's hard to tell. Bitcoin's a speculative asset. Everyone looks at Bitcoin as something that's rising and they think that it is a store of value.
Or a safe haven from traditional markets, which exactly. is wrong. But
yeah,
anyways.
So I would argue right now that mainly Bitcoin, as much as I love it and as much as I think that it is a long-term store of value, I would argue that it is actually more of a speculative asset, meaning that people will pull out their money and
keep it in cash.
And
yeah,
and
I suppose you have to think about who makes up the Bitcoin market. If it's mostly moon boys, then these are going to be the people who pull out when markets are tanking. It will also some fraction of people are in for the long, long game. I believe there's many strong Bitcoiners that if Bitcoin went to zero, they wouldn't be touching it.
I agree.
I can personally vouch for that.
There's a lot of people that will say, oh, if Bitcoin went to a dollar, then I'd buy a lot of it, right?
But
in reality, if Bitcoin dropped, right? Like if Bitcoin was going to zero, a lot of people will just assume it's a failed experiment and they're going to be out, right?
It's out of that realm, though.
So the way that I see it is, you know, similar to what John's saying is all of the people who are the get-rich-quick people, those moon boys, like he said, they're going to be the first to cut bait and run because they're not committed. I think there's a large percentage of Bitcoiners.
Probably 75% of people.
Yeah, but the other 25, right? The true believers, I kind of think they're geeking out on this. To them, this could seem like that global black swan event that could truly lead to the value proposition of Bitcoin. If this gets bad and the economy tanks and there's another Wall Street bailout and there's quantitative easing and all of these things that led to the inception of Bitcoin, it just proves, you know, its validity. And we could see an upturn, but retail is going to drive a big part of that market. And if institutions are not going to Bitcoin, they're not turning to Bitcoin, they're seeing it as a volatile asset instead of something that could potentially be a hedge against quantitative easing or allow them to retain some of the value of their portfolio, then too much money is going to come out of the ecosystem. When you factor all of this in with also the halving, that halving and that correction that I mentioned earlier, whether the economy was great or not, I think that correction would have occurred. So now when you couple a bad economy with that potential correction, who knows? I mean, who knows what would happen if post-halving Bitcoin dropped below $7,000, $8,000, $5,000? It wasn't that long ago. Bitcoin was at $3,500.
Yeah, and there's been so much talk over the past 6+ months of the bullish impact of the halving. Will the halving be priced in on Bitcoin? And this stock to flow stuff as well has just been shared so much on Twitter saying, oh, Bitcoin 55,000 after halving. I feel like if all investors and all traders are thinking along these lines, then the market is just going to teach them a hard lesson and say, hey, I'm going to do what I want to do. And if all of retail is thinking 55,000 post halving, then the market's going to do the opposite.
Then we need to start spreading that, right? It's time to start spreading. Bitcoin's going to go to 5,500. 5,500 post halving. Let's start talking about it. So instead, it goes to 11,000.
A lot of people assume the market moves in a different way. It actually moves in the way that the market believes is true. So to your point of saying that, okay, everyone believes it's going to 50K, if the market majority wise believes it's going to go there, it most likely will, but it's going to wipe out most people before it gets there.
Also, what you need to take into account is that there's big players in the market who can benefit from where the majority thinks price is going to go.
Exactly.
So if everybody is, say, short just below the 10K line, then institutions or big players have a huge incentive to drive the price up above 10K. All the people who are leveraged short get liquidated long, which drives the price up even further. And then the institutions make a big gain.
TA is great, right? But in a manipulated market, and I know there's the argument that all markets are manipulated, but there's no regulatory body to stop widespread manipulation. Those scam wicks, there's a reason that BitMEX does so well, right? So it's going to be a very tumultuous time, I think, the next couple of months in Bitcoin's price action.
Tumultuous.
Tumultuous. Yes. See how that like just flows out all at once?
Market dynamics.
Right?
That sounds good and like sexy at the same time.
That's the Barry White voice.
What is that?
It's provocative. It gets the people going.
It's bourbon.
That's what I'm talking about. Give me more of that. Give me more words like that.
All right. Well, let's talk about Charles Edwards' energy value model for Bitcoin. So Charles Edwards of Capriol Investments has put out a couple of articles about this energy value equivalence and the energy standard. And he always points to Henry Ford's energy currency. That's the example that he uses. John, why don't you unpack this a little bit and explain what your thoughts are on the model?
Yeah, so over the past 1 to 2 years, there's been a lot of talk about the S2F model, stock to flow, which to give a high level understanding, it's essentially how much is issued per year of an asset in relation to the total supply already. So the stock is total supply, the flow is how much is being issued. You divide the flow by the stock. So the lower the issuance in relation to the total supply, the higher the figure is going to be. And there was a lot of talk about this in the Bitcoin standard, and then there was a regression model done around it, and essentially it's used as a proxy for scarcity. The higher the stock to flow ratio, the more scarce an asset is. And it's a very interesting concept. And it looks very nice when it's graphed, and you can even put the stock to flow of gold on it, and you can say, okay, this is what the market cap of gold is, and when Bitcoin does X amount of halvings, it will reach this stock to flow, and then the value should be this, and blah, 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 blah. But I feel like it misses out on a really key essential point in that you need something tangible and something physical behind the system for it to have value. And stock to flow kind of misses out on this because essentially I could do an Excel spreadsheet of a fake currency, share it with you guys, and have it programmed in such a way as to be one of the most scarce assets with the highest stock to flow in existence. But there's not really a lot of robustness behind that and not really a lot of value behind it because it's just me and my fucking spreadsheet. But Charles Edward did some research into looking at the energy investment miners are putting into the Bitcoin network and modeling that with value as the output. And he has his own model, and obviously there's no model is perfect, but I feel like it adds another key tangible aspect to trying to value Bitcoin as an asset, which is how much skin in the game there is and how much tied to the physical world and how much actual tangible cost is being put into the network. And it also has a lot of connotations for people who are trying to experiment with competing consensus mechanisms, proof of stake and others. Really, it's questionable how much value is ever going to be in a system such as that. Seems as there's not that actual tangible cost going into it. There's also another key benefit to the ASIC hardware, which Bitcoin has a monopoly on, is that miners' balance sheet is tied to both that hardware, which can't be used for anything else, and the balance of Bitcoin. So some of you might have seen the recent Token Analyst piece of research that was noting some concern around centralization in mining. And yes, then the researcher Hasu did a good response to it, showing that what we need to trust really is that miners are always going to be rational and they're not going to fuck themselves over. So having this hardware is a key element to that. And those who are mining with GPUs or those who are using another system, they're always going to be at risk that somebody who is producing blocks can do something in their short-term profit interest, and then if stuff doesn't work out for the network, they can repurpose their hardware for other uses, or they can mine on another network.
I want to get back to what you were saying about stock to flow. John Lee moves into the Bitcoin energy value model that he's put forward. Compared to stock to flow, how does Charles Edwards' model sit with you?
In my opinion, I think both of them are addressing two important aspects. but they're both important together, not on their own. Scarcity is important. Stock to flow is important, but it's not the whole story. Another key part of the story is the energy and the infrastructure that go into it. And obviously these models can be dived into further and you can analyze the mathematics behind them and you have to make some assumptions. But in my opinion, just at a high level, both of them are covering two key aspects which play into Bitcoin's value. Can they be used to say 10 years into the future, Bitcoin is going to be worth this price? I'm skeptical of that. But do they pinpoint a key property of the Bitcoin network? I think yes.
So when he talks about the energy currency that Ford had, you know, set forth in 1924 and tried to get underway, and now it coming full circle, and now Bitcoin is being basically priced dollars per kilowatt hour as it can be, the model that he puts forward as opposed to the stock to flow, it seems logical. Moving forward though, man, I mean, which proves to be a more valid model, do you think?
Yeah, so for me, stock to flow doesn't make sense if you don't take into the energy input into the network. So energy value equivalence would be a better model, in my opinion, because with stock to flow, you can make another asset with a higher stock to flow, right? There's probably countless altcoins that have higher stock to flow than Bitcoin. So stock to flow on its own doesn't really say a whole lot.
John Lee, I know also you had mentioned some of the things that you guys at Miner Update have planned for 2020. So why don't we talk about some of those? What do you guys got upcoming?
We launched our newsletter in the past few months, so that has been a more intimate discussion with those who follow Miner Update. We have our research articles on the homepage, but sometimes the subscribers get more of a look into what's actually going on in the hardware market, some of our personal opinions on what might be going on and how the mining market might look going forward. So anybody who's not subscribed to that, I would definitely suggest giving it a look.
And just to add on to that, we will throw that link in the show's notes. So anyone who is interested in checking out the newsletter and subscribing, you can just scroll down into the notes and you'll be able to do that. Anyone who is in the Hashrate Discord, we will be setting up a partner channel in the Discord and posting the newsletter there so that you can read the newsletters as they come out and subscribe so that you can receive them to your inbox.
And then the conference was going to be a big one. Obviously, it's not completely confirmed yet. If coronavirus can be contained, it should go ahead. If not, it might have to be canceled. If coronavirus can be contained as well, personally, I plan to go back to China at some stage this year and learn more about the mining industry over there.
So John, the summit in Chengdu, you guys, I know we talked about this the last time, it was by far the conference that I think people spoke the most highly of as far as mining conferences go. What plans for this event in Chicago?
The co-founders, Daniel and Mia, have thought a lot about this, worked very hard on it, and they know that the summit in Chengdu was a big success, and they want to make this even bigger. And the angle they're going to take with this one is more looking at institutions and mining and how traditional industry might mix with mining moving forward, and almost like creating a platform to connect these sort of relationships and help foster them. We're seeing a lot of this recently. We've seen Layer 1 launched, backed by Peter Thiel. We've seen that energy plant in New York set up some Bitcoin mining. So the event in Chicago is looking more at the institutional angle of things. We also have another project where we're going to issue our first research paper. So the content on Miner Update often will look at numerous different research reports and will give our opinion on maybe some of the limitations or looking at a different angle or putting it in contrast to other data and then coming up with a content piece. But we are planning our first actual research paper, which can be distributed to industry professionals. And still in the early phases, but it's looking pretty exciting. And we're going to look into really making hash rate as an asset transparent, looking into what properties make hash rate unique, how to value a unit of hash rate, and coming up with some models on how to value it and what might change moving forward. Will there be a liquid hash rate exchange? And it's specifically going to be focused on SHA-256 hash rate.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. Connor and I had a conversation yesterday with somebody talking about the spot price of hash rate and the potential for a hash rate market. So I think that will be definitely apropos for everything that's going on right now, we know there's a few companies that are trying to launch hash rate markets.
Yeah, I've heard of a few myself as well.
That'll be interesting. I think the first contract actually closed a few weeks ago. You know, there's definitely the potential for that kind of market to allow miners to hedge against their mining operations. So could be interesting. I mean, it's a cool way potentially for non-miners to get involved in the mining market also.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe as well, looking into actually hash rate as an asset is extremely valuable as well. Because, right, I work in the mining industry, but technically it can be difficult sometimes to understand actually what is going on with hash rate. Like if a mining rig is connected to a mining pool, is the hash rate transferred across a communications protocol to the mining pool? Or how does heat in the outside environment impact the hash rate a mining rig produces? So I'm extremely looking forward to looking further into all these questions.
You know, in the event that a market like that does exist, I mean, if the price of Bitcoin can be manipulated, how easily could a market like that be moved, you know? So when do you guys think the first research paper is going to be released?
We're going to aim for the end of April and then present the findings at Chicago if it goes ahead.
That is awesome.
We're lining up as well some interesting researchers to peer review it. They're already giving their input on the methodology we're going to use and stuff like that. And yeah, then once it's published, we present the findings at the conference. Paper is distributed to those in the industry and we'll discuss further what we decide to do with the paper from there.
Nice. We'll be watching closely, man. Well, I think that that's actually a really good place to wrap up on. It's always good getting to have you on, man. I appreciate you making the time for us. I know it's Sunday morning for you right now.
Oh, it was always a pleasure to link up and have another interesting discussion.
Awesome. Well, John Lee, thanks for coming on the show. Will Bearman, thank you, man, for adding your flavor always. I know we give you a lot of shit. I know we give you a lot of shit, but you're a lot of fun. Walken, it was good to hear you again briefly.
Yeah, fuck this internet. I know how you feel now, man. I really do.
Bitcoin 55K.
There we go. No, remember, we got to say 5,500. That way it goes to 55K. It's going to do the opposite of whatever we say, right? So
true. Yeah, let's spread all the food now.
That's it. Let's get it out.
Bitmain hash rate futures.
All right. Well, to the listeners of the Hash Rate Podcast, I hope you guys enjoyed this show and we appreciate you guys for continuing to tune in. And we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast. We appreciate your continued support. Please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And head over to Twitter and give us a follow at Hash Rate. That's at H4SHR8.